Hey friends, it's your pal Mike Shea from Sly Flourish, here with another episode of Sly Flourish's Lazy GM Prep. In this weekly show, I go through steps from Return of the Lazy Dungeon Master while preparing for my Sunday role-playing game. In these days, I've been running the game Numenera by Monty Cook Games, a fantastic high fantasy, high science fantasy role-playing game built around the Cypher system. I've been running about 25, 26 sessions of this game now. I've got videos for every one of these sessions, and you can see them all as we go. And today we're going to go through my prep for today's session. This show, like all of the work of Sly Flourish, is brought to you by the patrons of Sly Flourish. If you want to get exclusive access to adventures, city source books, guides and inspiration to help you run your D&D games, video previews, previews of other upcoming products that I'm working on, access to a Discord channel, all kinds of things that you can get. You can become part of the Sly Flourish Empire by becoming a patron of Sly Flourish. The links are in the show notes below. And to the patrons of Sly Flourish, thank you so much for all of your support and helping me put on shows like this. We did not have a game last session. That was expected when I did my prep. I did the prep show anyway because I knew that I needed to do some homework ahead of time. So I knew I wasn't going to have enough players to run. And I have enough players to run today, but I only have three. So it's going to be me and three players. It's just, it's the middle of summer. One of my players is moving, so she needs a lot of time to help get prepared for the move. Two others are on travel and on vacation. So we have a lot of people out, and I don't really have any backups for this game. And it's late enough in the campaign that bringing in brand new, fresh backups really isn't ideal. So instead, I'm like, well, where are we in the game right now? And can I run a good session with only three people? And I think the answer to that is sure. I think definitely we can, because we're really doing kind of a big dungeon crawl. And I don't think if it was like the end of the campaign, we're closing in on the end of this campaign, and certainly I want to make sure that I would like to have at least five of the six people there for the ending of the campaign, as much as I can. But I don't want to limit, but when we look at the game and say, there's really, like, the stuff that's going on now, it's important, but it's not a big conclusion of the scenario. They're not, like, in the middle of a big battle. They're not fighting a great big boss. In this case, they're really going on a little mission. So that mission can work well with only three people. I think I've run another session in Numenera where we only had three people, and it was fine. Like, everybody still had things to do. And you can tune it pretty well. We're, like, fifth edition D&D, definitely when you have three people, you have to remember that there's this, geometric drop in power that exists, which is really kind of an interesting thing. In fact, that might be a fun little tip. One of the things that's important to understand when you think about the amount of power that the characters bring to the table is that the number of characters doesn't scale linearly. If you add characters beyond four, every character you add has a synergy with all of the other characters that make that whole more powerful than just adding one extra character. If you go from four to five to six, the power gain from that, the amount of synergy that those characters have with one another, the amount of capability that the group overall has is greater than just that linear gain of four to five to six. The same is true if you go in the other direction. If you go from four to three to two, the amount of synergy that those characters has goes down. And this is sort of a geometric drop in power or a geometric increase in power. It does not go up linearly. You're actually, the amount of power is dropping down. So that's a very nerdy idea, but it actually matters in play. When you're thinking about the number of monsters or the power of those monsters, the threat that those monsters bring, when you're considering that for your group, if you understand that the geometric increase in power from four to five to six or from four to three to two, when you know that that is not a linear, you also want to be thinking non-linearly about the number of monsters. It means that you want to have far fewer monsters when you have characters fewer than four and maybe far more monsters when you are going above four. And DMs who run games certainly see this. They're like, wow, all of a sudden we had a six character and now it's really hard to threaten everybody. And that's that reason, especially against like a solo monster. That solo monsters, because of the lack of the action economy alone, solo monsters are going to have a much harder time challenging six characters than they would challenging four characters. Part of that is the action economy, the sheer number of actions that they get. But the other part of it is the amount of synergy that those characters have, that every character has abilities that help other characters. If you have multiple spellcasters with healing, that is way different than if you have only one spellcaster with healing, or if you don't have any with healing. That is going to change things quite a bit. So it really changes things. So it's worth remembering the geometric increase or decrease in character synergy that occurs when you have characters, when the number of characters changes from 4 to 5 to 6 or from 4 to 3 to 2. So keep that in mind next time you're running your games. So last week we were preparing for the characters to infiltrate a location known as the Shield Below. The current scenario going on in my Numenera game is that the characters are in the deep. And by in the deep, we mean deep in the ocean. That they've already handled all of their big problems occurring on the surface. They've used massive amounts of technology, satellites with tungsten rods that can nuke facilities from orbit. They've used all kinds of stuff, an army. They have an army of about 6,000 soldiers that can teleport basically anywhere. And they use those as shock troops to make sure to defeat their enemies. But they don't have any of those capabilities underneath the sea. And their villain, the Fourth Emperor, is operating beneath the sea. The Fourth Emperor is actually beginning to emerge from its world, its other world, into our world, into the world of Numenera, through a throne, through a big portal in this place known as the Throne of the Fourth Emperor, which exists in the drowned city of clay. The characters, their connection to the data sphere is currently cut off by this place known as the Shield Below. It's a massive ancient machine that is able to block the data sphere from reaching down here into the deep. So they're going to have to go to the Shield Below and disable it so that they can get all of these resources that they have, mostly that army of 6,000 soldiers. If they can get that army down, they are in a much better state to be able to wage war against the fourth Emperor. So last week, because I knew I had like a pretty big place, I have this map. And it's funny, last week I actually went through and labeled this whole map and then thought, like, what am I labeling it for? So I actually deleted the labeled version because it's far easier for me to have potential chamber features that I can drop in whatever direction the characters decide to come into this place. It's sort of, you know, the things that they discover, I can shift those around depending on the approach that they take. And now I know that I probably want today's session to go a little bit, I'm going to need more material for today's session, because I only have three characters. And when you have three characters, the game moves much faster. It's very fast for three characters to get through a lot of content because there's a lot less back and forth chatter. There's a lot fewer turns that characters take even when they're just exploring a location, which means I might move some of those keys around. When I talked about keys, this idea that in order to get to this central chamber, they need to have a key, they can spend more time exploring this location in order to recover the key to open that chamber than if I wanted fewer. I want this to last probably two sessions. I think that, or maybe, you know, one and a half sessions. I'd like one good full session of them exploring this location. And I'd like one full session of them exploring this location, and then a half a session of them finishing this location and then going back and getting ready for the next big push, which is going to be probably the getting into that finale of the game. So the nice thing is, as long as I have enough material in this location to sort of expand it out so that it lasts in that amount of time, that I want things to last in that amount of time. Something that I don't think DMs spend enough time thinking about is how to make sure that the material that they're going to run fits the amount of actual time that they have to run them. It's important for DMs to understand how much time, actual time in the real world they have, and what kind of material they want to fit that time. And one of the reasons that I promote heavily the idea of keeping a flexible amount of stuff and flexible amount of material in front of you so that you can move things around. You can move around encounters, you can move around locations, you can move around events, you can move all these things around in different ways, shrink them or expand them as you want, is because we want our game to fit the time. We want our game to fit the time that we've got. And you might say, like, okay, I want this to last roughly three sessions. Or you might hit a location, you're like, it really doesn't matter. It goes as long as it goes. And that's cool. But you might also say, yeah, I kind of want things to move along a little bit. I want the game to move forward a little bit. So I don't want this location to last five sessions. I want it to only last like one and a half sessions. So what are the things you can do to make sure that things are staying in the amount of time that you want? And the easiest way is to keep all of the things flexible. You can move things around. You can move features of a location. You can move secrets and clues, things that the characters need to discover. You can move them closer. You can move them further away. The encounters that are going on, you can move those encounters about. You can move the the occupants, any enemies that are going around, you can move them wherever you want them to go to either speed up or slow down the game. And you don't want it to be boring, right? When I say slow down the game, I don't mean like adding a lot of filler. I mean just expanding the things out so that there's more time for the characters to explore an area. Your goal should be that the things that they discover, the groups that they fight, the locations that they explore, the NPCs that they talk to, that these are all useful to them. They're all useful. They're all interesting. You're not just adding a lot of fluff. You're adding stuff that is genuinely interesting to the players. It gives them a chance to show off their characters. It gives them a chance to talk to interesting NPCs. You want all of these kinds of things in your game. And that idea of keeping the elements of your game abstract, preparing them so you have them in hand, but keeping them abstract so that you can move them around to fit the actual physical time that you have at the game, I think is a really powerful tool. And it's a great way to keep the pacing of your game moving at that pace so that you're oscillating between, you know, sort of relaxed situations where the characters have a good handle on it to those situations where things are really tough and things are really, really, really on edge. And you want to oscillate between this. You don't want things on edge all the time. You don't want things easy all the time. You want to oscillate between easy and hard and easy and hard and easy and up and down, up and down, up and down. I don't know if that tip video is like 12 minutes long. So let's see, let's go back. So what we're going to do last week, we went through, we filled out a lot of locations. We got some ideas about what was going on here. We had some interesting things, but we didn't fill out the actual prep notes because I wasn't actually running a game. So I started it. I created some prep notes, but today we're actually going to do our honest to God prep. So we're going to look at the characters. So I think Baiko, Aunt Cecilia is going to be there. I think Samji is going to be there. I don't even know who's going to be here. I know at least three. I think three people are going to be there. And I know Cecilia is going to be one of the characters that's there. I think Nakia is out. I think it's either Samji or Jad is there. I think it was Jad who is there. I think Samji is out. I know Juniper is out. I think Nakia is out. So I think it might be Baiko, Jad, and Cecilia that are going to be there. So that's worth considering. Like what are the parts of this adventure, this particular dungeon, this particular adventure that are gonna work well for those characters? And I think being able to exist partially in and out of phase, that can be interesting. I mean, a lot of them have done it. Like Cecilia had a big moment of her character arc occur recently. I don't know. I think one interesting thing is that the Kleites, I think this is a good secret, the Kleites were built much the same way as Cecilia's. Whoops. The Fourth Empire genetically, let's see if we can kill this little pop up here. Don't need that. The Fourth Empire genetically built workers and soldiers from animals. Are they all animals? I guess, right? The creatures of the world at the time. The Kleites are a hive mind of half cybernetic and half organic creatures. I really think of the Kleites as being very Borg-like. I just watched Star Trek First Contact, which had lots of Borg stuff in it. And I'm taking a lot of inspiration from that because I enjoyed it. And I think it actually fits. I think it fits pretty well here. So that, yeah, some of those secrets, I think it's trying to dig into the characters' backgrounds and draw secrets out of that, I think is really useful. For Baiko and for Jad, I'm thinking about their characters. I'm not sure what sort of connections their characters might have to like underwater sea creature kind of things. I'm not sure. It would be particularly interested for a character who rides the lightning to be able to ride the lightning underwater. I think there's fun things that we could do there. So strong start. What is going to happen at the beginning of our game? The Fourth Emperor, I think an energy surge at the temple in the center of the drowned city erupts. The Fourth Emperor is beginning to arrive. I think that's a strong start. Like they can, you know, there'll be this like tremendous power surge. And I think the the Quiet Empire, which are octopi, will be able to sense this, and they'll say like something is going. If you're, you know, if you're going to make your move against the fourth emperor, now would be the time. And as much as the Quiet Empire, who are the octopi, as much as the Quiet Empire would like to, our forces just are not strong enough to be able to withstand. This is a secret clue. The forces of the Quiet Empire are not enough to face and survive against the Kleite. The Kleite's protecting the Drowned City. I think that's pretty cool. So that's a strong start. Is there anything else? I mean, you could have sort of your preparation montage. You know, that would be kind of a fun scene. Looks like I already created sort of the scenes. So I'm gonna add some scenes though. The energy surge at the Drowned City is one. The preparation montage, a la Commando, Arnold Schwarzenegger's Commando, lots of knives going into sheaths and pistols going into holsters and big muscles, flexing, weird vests full of shotgun shells. The preparation montage, the journey to the, I have like leaving the Coral Cathedral, right? Infiltrating the shield below. Choices. How to engage with the shield below. I don't think I gave her a name. I don't know if I wrote it in here. But I liked the idea that there is a single creature, Selphia. Yeah, Selpha, the first herald of the Fourth Empire. Let's see, a chamber containing the brain trust of the shield below. Selpha, the first herald. Is that the first herald? Third herald? I think we'll have third. Selpha. So one of the secrets is that the shield below is protected and operated by a central intelligence known as Selpha. Known as Selpha, third herald of the Fourth Empire. An ancient octopus, a cybernetic octopus. Selpha is millions of years old, continually reconstructed by the technology of the Fourth Emperor. In a similar fashion to Cecilia's, only organic instead of crystalline. Organic nanotech instead of crystalline. So that could be fun. What other aspects are there? I think while the shield below blocks the connections between the data sphere above and the one below, it also uses its own data sphere to connect the hive mind of the Kleites. The shield below is the primary node, the primary vertex. I get angry cats, the primary vertus. So, yeah. So I think like them using, I think the shield below does more than just block the data sphere above. I think it is a single facility, a massive machine that also operates the data sphere down here. I don't think it is like if you blow this place up, it'll destroy the data sphere. But I think it's a central vert that exists here. I think that would be cool. What else? What other secrets might the characters learn here? The throne of the Fourth Empire, of the Fourth Emperor, is protected by thousands of Kleites. I think that is a more than any group, including the Quiet Empire, could take on once. But it could be destabilized by using the shield below and attacking it with the Glistening Army. The Glistening Army is their group of super soldiers that they rescued and recruited that are all people like Samji. One of the characters, Samji, is a cybernetic person, and they have found other cybernetic people. and they've turned them into an army. And the thing that this army can do is they can travel in and out of the data sphere at will, as long as there's a connection point. They don't need a Virtus to do so, which means they can, if they can open up the connection between the data sphere above and the data sphere below, suddenly they have 6,000 soldiers on their side. This is a big advantage. So that's pretty cool. Other things that they can learn here in the shield below. If we look at the shield below and we think about, let's do a review of the things that we had kind of done last week. So we have an altar to Selpha, the third herald. Looks like a high priestess of the original fourth emperor. Chamber of heavy water, heavy, highly radioactive million-year-old runoff from the power sources of the shield, ancient armory, humanoid and non-humanoid weaponry of the Kleites. Examples of the races of the Fourth Empire created, including bee people, earlier Golians, maybe even humans, aquatic creatures, and so on. Representation of the Hex. I think, yeah, so the Hex. That is another secret. I think we can put in a secret about the Hex. I think we had the secret before, but I don't think we revealed it. The Hex was engineered by the nanos of the Fourth Empire as a universal sentient nanite that could be molded into any creature or construct that they needed. It became too sentient and broke away from the drive of the Fourth Empire. So that matters. That's pretty good. I'm going to take a quick break. I will be back in just a few minutes. Please enjoy. Those of you in chat, please let everybody else know. One of the things that I think is important for me to remember, and one of the things that I think is really important for any GM to remember, is that the game that matters the most is the next one you're going to run, the game that's going to run today. So it's really easy to get caught up in all of my lore and all of the things that I'm kind of thinking about for the campaign and how it's going to conclude and all of this stuff. But I also have three players who are going to be sitting at my game later today, and I'm going to run an entertaining game for them. So I want to make sure that I'm really focused on what are the things that they're going to do, what are the choices that they're going to make, what are the directions that they're going to head, the things that they're going to deal with. And that's really, when you think about the eight steps of Return of the Lazy Dungeon Master, those steps are focused around those things. What are the things that they're going to do? But even in your, like, my secrets and clues, it's like, okay, these are lots of nice things that they can discover, and that's great. But like, what really matters today? What are the things that matter today that are, you know, when I sit down there, when it's time to begin the game, what are the things that are really I want to have happen, that I really want to offer so that the game is as enjoyable as it can be? So I want to get my mind back in that mode so that I'm thinking about today's game particularly. It's easy to get caught up in the big things going on with the Fourth Empire, but what matters? What are they going to face today? So an example is, like, I think at some point when they're going through the shield below, if they have a bad, like a GM intrusion, that they are injected with some kind of earworm that lets them hear Selpha. I think that will be neat. I want them to have one of them is going to have like a direct connection to Selpha and to the, you know, maybe even be connected to the data sphere down here and feel it. I think that would be kind of neat. And I like the idea of like the babblefish, you know, the earworm. How about the data sphere here in the deep is organic, not technical. So that would mean that instead of having this like Superman style twirling bunch of rings, that there's actually an organic, the data sphere generator, or the data sphere shield generator is actually a large amoeba. I don't know how to spell amoeba. An organic creature. I think that could be kind of cool. It looks like secret-wise, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I've got enough secrets. I've got 10 good secrets. A-M-O-E-B-A. Thank you. A-M-O-E-B-A. Cool. Large amoeba. An organic creature. I kind of like that idea. So I think I'm good on secrets. I think I've got cool scenes that can occur. Speaking with Selpha. I guess that's gonna, we're gonna move that down here. Blowing up the generator, the shield. I think that works. So do I feel, and so NPCs, I've got locations, that's good. Because I have my shield below, I've got a list of all the stuff that's there. That's pretty cool. I could use some NPCs. Obviously I have Selpha. We have, so Takrin, I think an interesting thing is that Takrin is independent now. Takrin's cut off. The skull that they're carrying has now been disconnected from Takrin the Herald. And what does that do? That's kind of interesting. I think that meeting other, are there other creatures here that they might meet? They could meet a spy, a camouflaged octopi. What would be a cool name? Yerva, Quiet Empire Spy. Yenerva. I think the idea that there is an infiltrator who's already broken into this place and they lost contact with them. This would be a good secret. This would be something that they'll learn early. So I'm going to put a early secret, which is the Quiet Empire sent in a scouting party. Kitty working. Sent in a scouting party who never returned. They were led by a spy named Enerva. I think NPCs are fine. So monsters. Now we think about, what are the different kinds of creatures that exist here? What are the things that they might face? And so we know that we have Kleites, but I think there's different kinds. There are Kleite soldiers. These are probably level 3, the Kleite foot soldiers. They are probably like spiked crab things. Kleite, what do we want to call them? The equivalent of like a veteran, like hunter killers. They're level 4s and they move much faster. Are they shark-like? Shark-like with beam weapons. You have Kleite workers, but they're not really, they're just like level 2s at it, you know. They're like small spiders, aqua spiders, and they're like level 2s. And then what would be like their deadliest, you know, the deadliest troubleshooters? There's probably not a lot of them. Have I done Praetorians already? They're level 5. And what do they look like? Probably big cybernetic spiders and with tentacles. They're both invertebrate and shelled, and they have like a range of tentacles over them that have like cybernetic components, but then they also walk on other things. They're general troubleshooters. And then we have Selpha herself, and she is a level 7 herald. I think that works. Treasure, we're going to handle just with random stuff. I think I've got everything I need in order to run today's game. So I want to thank everybody for hanging out with me today while I prepare for my Numenera game. If you enjoyed this show, you can help me out by subscribing to the Sly Flourish newsletter, where you get weekly D&D articles sent right to your inbox, along with a free adventure generator PDF. You can pick up any of my books in the Sly Flourish bookstore. There is a link to the bookstore in the show notes below, including physical copies of Return of the Lazy Dungeon Master, the Lazy DM's Workbook, and the Lazy DM's Companion are all available. You can join the Sly Flourish Patreon. Their link to my Patreon is in the show notes below. Patrons get access to all kinds of cool exclusive material and also help me put on shows like this. You can also like my video, subscribe to my video, leave a comment, share it with your friends, and spread the word that we do here. Thank you all very much. Have a great day, and get out there and play a role-playing game.